Hi, I'm Bill Arnold with George Fraser.
Hi, Bill.
Thanks for checking out this podcast, A Real Recovery. You can hear the show live Sundays at 5 p.m. This, as well as many other podcasts, are available to listen to while you take a walk or do whatever you want to do. The address is myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to what I promise will soon be another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. Thanks for being with us tonight. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio. Across the way, George P. Fraser. Alex at the board. We got a big show tonight, George.
We do.
George, you know, we talk about addictions of all kinds. It's a subject with broad appeal, and it's hosted by us, two guys with limited appeal. So to up the game, we brought on a very special guest tonight. We have John Turnipseed with us tonight, and he's got a story unlike any other I have heard.
I'm with you on that.
Have you heard anything like it?
Nothing close.
Nothing close.
I like how it ends up, too.
And how it's still in progress, which is really exciting.
It's getting better all the time.
It is.
It's another Beatles song there, Bill. Did you catch that?
I didn't catch that. George, you're a lot more interesting in your own head. Did you know that?
I know it.
Yeah, yeah. Alex, how was your week?
It was a good week.
Good. See, he's got nothing but enthusiasm.
Okay, we'll go back to him in about 10 minutes.
George, we're going to keep things moving tonight because we have a lot to cover with John, but let's talk about step three real quick, and then let's bring on our special guest.
Step three, and this applies so well to our show. We're not just about drug addiction and alcoholism. We're for all Christians because we should be in recovery. Our life should be different from when we first met Jesus. And step three is we've made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understand him. And we understand God to be Jesus, Bill. We want to spend time in the Word. But this goes to all areas of our life. If Jesus is going to be my Savior over my problems in my life, he needs to be Lord over all areas of my life. And this is where it gets hard. You know, we make some progress here, and then something comes up. And we're always pressing on towards the goal, as Paul said in Philippians, to be more Christ-like.
Mm-hmm. George, I've queued up Proverbs 3:7 that says, do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and shun evil.
I like that.
How does that work for step three?
Works very well. How do you do that?
What am I, the answer man?
Well, you brought it up. Yeah. How do you fear God and shun evil?
Well, I can start by not despising the Lord's discipline. I can start by obeying his word. I can start by not feeling rebellious. And when I feel rebellious, try to dial it back a little bit. I have choices to make, George, every
day. Absolutely.
And I ask God to go ahead of every situation I'm in throughout my day. And when I arrive there, Lord, let me look and see you there to help me make the choice or the decision that I have in front of me.
I like that. And when we're in active addiction, we don't have a choice. And one of the things about getting into recovery is now we do have a choice every day. Who are you going to serve? Are you going to serve God or are you going to serve yourself? And these come up all the time. It gets easier and we get better at it, but we have to be honest and say, hey, I fall way short. I don't want to do this sometimes. There's some areas of my life I want to hold on to because I get things out of them that I want to have. You need to be able to give everything to God, and that's a tall order.
Agreed. George, I want to jump back to Proverbs 19:3, a classic favorite of Real Recoveries, which is this. A man's own foolish acts destroy his life, but his heart is angry with the Lord. So in other words, you mess up your own life and then you blame God.
Sure, it's his fault.
Right, right.
He made me in the first place. What was he thinking? We need to get responsible for our actions.
Right. All right, George, without any more delay, I want to bring on our guest because we want to maximize the whole hour.
You bet.
John Turnipseed is an author of a new book that's come out called Bloodline. And the subtitle is, you spend enough time in hell, you're going to get the feeling you belong. And John was a guest on the show several years ago, but we've been trying to get him back forever. As a matter of fact, he's had a very busy week. He was on the Glenn Beck show this week, which was a surprise to me because I didn't know when I was calling him to come on the show tonight that he had such a busy week.
I thought you and Glenn were kind of tight.
No. I've got his cell phone number, but that's it.
Okay.
Yeah. You probably don't have that, do you?
Who, Glenn?
Glenn Beck's cell phone number?
No.
Okay.
No.
John, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
So, John, your book, when did this hit the streets?
October 1st.
Okay, excellent. And this is really a chronicles the story of you and your life starting at about age 12?
No, that book actually goes back to when I was 5, 6 years old. It just sort of tells the whole story.
Okay. Now, I don't want to go into too much of your story because I want to talk a lot tonight about how you're living out and what the Lord's doing in your life. But for the sake of our listeners, can you give them a 3-minute synopsis?
Yeah, I come
elevator
from
talk.
From a perfect, I call it, Christian home, where mom and dad are just great human beings, and we go to church, and everybody is happy, and I do the things that are good, and I know who Jesus is, and my father separates from the family to come start a new life here in Minnesota, and runs into the big city lifestyle of women and alcohol. Found out that he was a very angry drunk. And when we came up here, we didn't know it. So this guy that I loved and idolized, all of a sudden, a year later, he's a beast. He's a boogeyman. He's kicking down doors. He's knocking my mother through plate glass windows. I mean, this guy is just terrible. He's tying her up and beating her right in front of me, you know. And it's like, I don't know what to do. I'm 1,000 miles from my grandmother and my family. And here this guy that I idolized and loved has left the church. And is beating my mom. And so that led me into just being a hateful young man that got in trouble in school, that became very violent, going to jail at 12, 13 years of age, carrying guns, all kinds of crazy, crazy things. And finally threatening my dad, threatening to kill him. And he knew I would because he knew what he had raised. And he left my mother alone. And just it spiraled. It didn't stop there. You know, prison 3 times just for crazy, crazy things, and just drug addiction, crack addict for years, just crazy. And it stopped 21 years ago. I lived in that life for 30-something years. And at 40 years of age, I'm 60 now, and it stopped. And that's getting you up to date 20
yeah.
years ago.
Now, when you started off in a criminal sort of lifestyle, you actually had some momentum going, didn't you? You were able to get some other people involved in your mission.
Well, at first, I got introduced by a cousin from Chicago who was a Blackstone Ranger, I believe, at the time. And he gave me my first gun and taught me how to, you know, shoot and how to use it, and took me on a couple of armed robberies and basically just mentored me in the formation of thinking about getting other kids to follow me. You mm-hmm. know, don't ever do what they want you to do. If they won't let you lead, don't do it. He used to tell me, you know. And so I started finding guys that wanted to hang out with me because I was sort of cool. You know, I had a gun and I could stay out late at night and all this kind of stuff, and they could stay in my basement, you know, sometimes, you know. I started just forming my first gang. And that led to forming a prison gang at 18, the first one in Minnesota in St. Cloud Penitentiary. Mm-hmm. And I ran that prison for 3 years. So they actually put me out, you know. It put me out of that prison to...
Because you were getting too powerful in the prison?
Yeah, I had too much influence.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's sort of like, it sounds crazy, but, you know, the parole board called me in and said, hey, you know, I'd like to be out of here in 45 minutes. And I said, bet. And I was on the streets.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. And the life
There's
of crime.
There's a little more to the stories in the book, but.
Oh, right, you know. Right.
Makes me want to go read the book right now.
Yeah.
Get out of prison early by taking control of the prison bill. So there's some organizational, and you have some real positive skills. You're just working for the enemy, though. You're not working for God here.
Absolutely. God gives us gifts, and until we learn how to use them, we can be very detrimental to mm-hmm. other people.
Because you got skillful gifts, and you're using them.
You got skills.
Yeah.
You know.
So one of the things that I found particularly interesting was you started also at a fairly young age getting involved with the prostitution.
Yes.
There's a picture of you in your book, you know, as a younger person all dressed up in the late 70s mm-hmm. as a pimp. And I thought, well, you got the pimp suit on. And it's just fantastic. At the 3-piece suit. I mean, this is stylish. I mean, this is reason enough to get the book, George.
What page?
It doesn't say.
Let's read it right now, right? Right live on the air.
But again, you've got skills, you've got personality, you've got charisma, you've got all the stuff you're using to your advantage. It's just all illegal.
It's all illegal.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was tutored and mentored into that lifestyle by some very high-level, well-known Minnesota pimps. You
okay.
know, most of them came from other states, mm-hmm. from Memphis and Chicago and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
But we've had a lot of pimps in Minnesota, a lot of pimps. We even got a street in New York and California, the Minnesota Strip, that's named for Minnesota girls that came up there and specifically worked mm-hmm. those strips.
And one of the girls that you were was working for you, you ended up marrying, is that correct?
I ended up, that was my first wife.
Your first
I
wife.
Married her.
Yep, and you had a child with her?
I had a child with her.
And then you continued to have her work, even
I
after
continued
her baby.
To have her work. You know, okay. I didn't marry, I loved her in my own mm-hmm. crazy way, but I married her really because I was doing some really stupid things, and I knew that a wife couldn't be forced to testify against you.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to jail for one thing, and I didn't want them to flip her on some other crimes that I did, so I asked her to marry me.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, at that time, you can get conjugal visits
yeah.
in prison.
Yeah.
So everything was for my pleasure.
Selfish reasons, right?
Selfish reasons, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that makes sense. So you now have a child with her?
Yes.
And she has moved on and has taken up with another pimp.
Yeah, she had another pimp lured her away.
Okay.
That happens very common in that
okay.
life.
And tragically, when you were in prison, your three-year-old son was...
The guy was... Most of the time, you would get rid of the kid, but he took her out to Oklahoma City, and they knew no one, so he couldn't have anyone babysit the kid. So he would babysit the kid, and he didn't like the kid. And so he started beating on the kid,
mm-hmm.
you know, systematically beating the kid until he one day hit him too hard. Took his life.
Mm-hmm. And you got that news while you were in prison.
I was in prison, yes.
I can't imagine that mm-hmm. call.
Yeah, that was a tough one.
I mean, that's rage unlike anything you could experience, and then you're in prison. So how do you process something like that? I mean, I know that's a pretty dumb question, but...
Yeah, you really don't. It's sort of like burnt cheese, if you can imagine. You got a skillet with burnt cheese in it, you know. It's just a mess. And it stinks. You don't know what to do with it, you know. You just try to scrape it and get rid of it. But the stench of it is just all in your whole soul. So I was mixed with guilt and anger,
mm-hmm.
you know, and mostly guilt. I think I was... a time that I was very suicidal.
Yeah. We're talking to John Turnipseed tonight, and he's the author of a book called Bloodline, and there's going to be a lot more conversation coming up. Lots of questions on Real Recovery tonight. Thanks for being with us. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back to Real Recovery. Bill Arnold, George Fraser, Alex W. on the board. We've got a very special guest in studio tonight, John Turnipseed. John, quite a story. Former gang leader, drug dealer, but now he's a community leader, a pastor, a speaker, facilitator, and he's written this wonderful book called Bloodline. You spend enough time in hell, you're going to feel you belong. You get the feeling you belong. I should be able to read that correctly, George, but I can't.
Doesn't surprise me.
Really, that was a little hurtful.
Sorry.
Just a little hurtful.
Hey, you know, I want to get back to this, Bill, because it sounds like this is about as far down as a guy could go, but my guess is there's some more coming.
Yeah.
So
I thought you were going to ask an investigative question.
No, that would be beyond me. John, what happened next?
Well, okay, so... You know, I'm going through life raising my sons to be criminals, raising kids that I had no desire for them to finish school. You know, I figured they'd drop out when they were 15, 16 because the plan in their life was to make money illegally any way you can off other people, whether it's through drugs or just taking people's money or whatever. And I felt it was okay to teach my kids that. And a lot of things happened. I, you know, was shot when I was 16, was involved in a robbery gone bad where someone lost their life, you know, just ugly, ugly things. And funny, my son and my grandson followed in my footsteps. My son was shot 17 times, actually, Little Johnny, and his son was shot when he was like 14. and is now doing life without the possibility of parole. So, you know, I've got the three grandsons in jail right now. I've got 10 nephews in jail, 15, 20 first cousins in jail, 30 associated cousins in jail, all because of raising kids to be criminals, mm-hmm. you know, just a family, a whole family that had decided that we were going to be a criminal enterprise. And so there's a lot of prostitutes, and very few graduated from high school. That's a rare thing in my family, or was. It's starting to change now. And a lot of drug addicts, a lot of men. I'm an old man in my family. Men don't live to be past 50 in my family. Mm-hmm. They die of either gangs or drug overdoses or something crazy, you know, alcoholism. So and when I turned 40, was sort of the turning point when, like I said, my son got shot. My oldest son got shot the first time, 13 times they shot him. And he lived through that. And I was in jail again. And I was facing 40 years myself for 50 felonies that they had exposed me and caught me doing. And I was ready to go to jail. And I just, that's when I gave it all to God. I just, mm-hmm. you know, out of just, I had nowhere else to go.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was going to prison and I was okay with it. Because, you know, my life was hell anyways. You know, I was a crackhead and had messed over everybody and everything. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted some relief, man. That's all I wanted.
Can you tell us how you gave it to God?
I gave it to him laying down on a dirty floor, on a cement floor. I accidentally thought I was calling my mother. I called my daughter. And she said, just give it to Jesus. I remember, that's all I remember from the phone call. And I just asked God to come into my life. Because living was too, I would have killed myself if he not let me know right then that he would take me. And he let me know. I can't explain it. You know, it wasn't a voice or anything. It was a feeling. And I knew everything would be all right. I got up. I'd been on the floor for about 15 minutes, thinking, got up. And people were knocking at the door. And I just came out smiling. I just knew it would be okay. Knew everything, even though I pled guilty and was going to prison waiting for sentencing, I knew it would be okay.
So all the consequences are still there.
Yes.
But you knew you were going to be okay.
I knew I was. That's all I wanted to be, was okay.
That's the peace that passes all understanding, Bill. That can only come from the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
How well, you're a smart guy, and all of a sudden you still have all this stuff, but you are okay.
I'm okay. I know that things are going to work out. You know, I know that regardless of where I end up, I won't be a crackhead anymore.
Mm.
Crack addict, I'll use a better term, I guess, but we call people crackheads.
Sure.
And and I wouldn't be the scumbag that I grew up to be.
Nice.
Yeah.
And but you're still in prison, so how did this, you know,
well,
walk itself out?
A funny thing happened on the way to the penitentiary. The judge changed his mind. I didn't tell him that I'd had this conversion or anything. When we interviewed him later, a few years later, about why he didn't send me to prison, he said, I don't know.
Wow.
Don't know. I was a three-time loser. I was on probation and parole and pled guilty to 50 theft crimes. The Career Criminal Division was prosecuting me. And you don't see these boys unless you really messed up. And when they come pretty hard. No deals, no nothing, you know. And we had worked out a deal for like 10 years, you know. We had finally whittled them down to 10 years if I just took the deal. And I went to court that day expecting to get 10 years and walked out of there on probation.
That's a good day, Bill.
That was a good day.
That's unbelievable. I mean, you're a career criminal with 50 felonies, and they're letting you off the hook?
Even though I'm on probation and parole.
Yeah. So God's got something very specific planned for your life, and part of that plan is getting you to not go to prison at that juncture.
Part of the plan was to have me out in the streets. It wasn't a party now. You know, it wasn't like, hey, you know, everything was wonderful. But it was still some hard work ahead of me.
Okay, were you tempted at all? Sorry, Bill. But,
that's all right.
You know, the consequences are gone. Hey, I can kind of go back to what I'm doing.
Heck yeah. I was tempted. A guy asked me one time, how do you do this, man? I said, it's hard, man. And, you know, every day I have to wake up and do the same thing, you know, that I went to sleep on, you know, and that's hard to do. And so I applaud anybody that gets one day of recovery because I know they work for it, man, you know. And some days are better than others, and some days are absolutely fabulous. But every once in a while, there's that piss of a day.
Oh, I hear you.
That you just don't, you know, man, sometimes you just want to just do it just for the heck of it.
Mm-hmm.
But so I got high because I liked it. You know, it's like, you know, I wish I could think of really when I got high, I liked it. I liked it. It caused me a lot of misery, but I liked getting high.
Mm-hmm. George, you've said that too.
I absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
It could have killed me, and I
mm-hmm.
loved it. That's why I asked the question. Now I can do it and, you know, get away from it. So how did you stay with your walk with Jesus? You're fairly new on the faith. How did you, you know, do that?
Well, I surrounded myself with people that were doing the same thing. When I was a criminal, I surrounded myself with criminals. That's all I dealt with. Anybody else was foreign to me. When I became a Christian, I surrounded myself with Christian guys. I made new friends, mentors, sponsors, all that, you know, and I just listened to them. And the fifth chapter, How It Works, it talked about rigorous honesty. That chapter floored me because it wasn't about what I was telling everybody else. It was about being honest with me. When mm-hmm. I got ready to get high, I'd tell somebody instead of holding it, you know, instead of being sneaky like I was accustomed to, I would tell people. Sometimes it would shock them how honest I was. Man, I just feel like this, you know. And I'd call people, anybody that would listen, and I'd just talk to them. And it's kept me. 21 years, it's kept me.
Well, you thoroughly followed the path, and you gave everything to it. If we don't do that, Bill, we're going to go back. You need to be all in on this recovery and your walk, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. It's all, it is all or nothing. And because the one day you don't give it your all, you know, that's why you have sponsors and mentors and friends, because when you don't have it to give, they will help you carry you through the rough water. You know, Art Erickson and other guys like that have helped me through the rough waters because there's been some rough times for me, you know. So just in life, when you're living life, there's some rough things that happen in life.
Now, John, you're really vulnerable about this, but, you know, you have wrong friends, wrong choices, wrong places. And we talk about playmates and playgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so all of a sudden you decide to be sober. You can't wake up and be in Maui, you know,
yeah,
away from everybody. You still have to encounter all the same locations and places and people
mm-hmm.
That can trip you, that could trigger you. And yet you've got this accountability now and this personal strength that's really giving you a strength you never had before.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm not saying it's not impenetrable, but you're really solid with it.
Oh, absolutely. And at the times when there ain't people around, I mean, I travel a lot. So every once in a while, I'm 500 miles away from my nearest friend or whatever. God sustains me. I just am so, my relationship with him is honest. So that he already knows me, and I trust him, and he, you know, he just, I don't want to disappoint him. You know, it's the first time I've ever loved someone that's loved me completely. And so I don't want to disappoint him. You know, I fall short a lot, but, you know, I know there's a measure with, it's just a relationship that I have with him. I don't know if anybody else has that relationship. I think I'm his favorite. Yeah, you know.
But the out of town you is the real you, isn't it?
The out of town me, you're by yourself. That's when you're really to your element, you know. Especially I travel and I get to travel in places and be around people and they tell me how great I am and all this kind of stuff. So that's when you're in the most danger, I would call
mm-hmm.
it.
Yeah.
And I stay in close contact with people when I'm out of town. I talk to people until up to time I'm going to bed, you know. I stay prayed up and I'm pretty confident that God will sustain me.
Hmm.
You decide before you go to the airport how you're going to behave when you go out of town. And I used to travel a lot, John, for my business. And Yeah, they hand you a free drink coupon when you check in, so mm-hmm. that gets you into the bar. And I used to finally had to tell them, disconnect my movies. That temptation was gone because that was always a tough one for me. Mm-hmm. And not going into the bar. You know, you make the decision before you leave Minneapolis.
Oh, absolutely.
And you got to stick to it because there's a lot of stuff out there that looks pretty good that is bad for you.
Sometimes there's what I call an oops. I was just in the Four Seasons and, you know, in their room.
Mm-hmm.
There's a refrigerator. Man, I ain't never seen this much whiskey in my life. It's like, and candy to go with it.
Did they sell those Toblerone bars? Do you remember those things?
Sure.
Those were always in there. Yeah, big, long ones.
Yeah,
they're like $8.
$29.50 for one of them, yeah.
It's full of all kinds of chocolates and things, zoom, zooms, and wham, wham. And then you open the refrigerator. There's four different types of beer, two different types of wine. Every major alcohol brand is in there and everything and stuff. And plus, I've got an unlimited room tab, you know, because I was the guest of someone. And so it's like...
It's a sign from God.
Yeah.
It's the green light.
Yeah, I'm getting another sign from Alex that we're going to take a little break. We'll be back in just a minute. We're talking to John Turnipseed tonight. Stay with us. We've got another couple segments ahead. Welcome back. So glad you joined us tonight. Bill Arnold, George Fraser.
I
Alex,
am here.
Alex W. on the board. And we've got John Turnipseed in studio tonight. John is got one of the most compelling stories I've ever heard. It really is absolutely fascinating. And he's written a book called Bloodline. You spend enough time in hell, you get the feeling you belong. And if you've just joined us, he is a former gang leader. And set a history of being in and out of trouble with the law, and did some time in prison, and made a profound turnaround in his life at age 40, and is now doing tremendous things for the Lord. George, I don't know where to begin with this story.
Well, just to recap, Bill, I'm looking at 10 years. I'm going to, you know, go take the deal for 10 years, and I wind up walking out.
Yeah, you're on your way to do 10 years.
Yeah, and I'm free.
The judge changes his mind for a reason he can't really put his finger on, and you're out free.
Yep.
And then it all begins.
Well, and he did his part. Faith without works is dead, mm-hmm. and he got connected with the right group of people and did the right things. He said, you know, I was tempted. I like getting high.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that maybe you did, but now you got a new way of life, and it kept getting better for you. What are some examples of where God kept, you know, adding to your recovery?
Yeah, I was at this job where the newspaper, Tom Lydon, came in and exposed me and embarrassed the place that I was working at. I was a teacher, and everybody was like, oh, my God, John Turnips, he's such an awful person. And I go to jail, and I go for sentencing, and they don't sentence me, and I come back to the job, and a month later, they promote me to manager. I was the lead instructor. They promoted me to manager. I'm working there for a while, and I leave there. One day I just decided I wanted to do something different, didn't have any clue of any other job, and Art Erickson asked me to come work at Urban Ventures, and I got two job offers, one to be the director of African-American Men's Project, and the other one was to come to Urban Ventures. So here I was, a guy, ten-time felon, three-time loser, with two job offers to be the director of two different places. And having my choice and never even applied for the jobs. And I took Urban Ventures, and just great things kept happening. And they continue to happen. I just got custody of this guy sitting in the studio with me, Devon, who's 8 years old. He's actually my great-grandson.
Oh, Nate.
Not just meaning he's great. He's great, but actually I'm a great-grandfather. You have a kid of 16. They have a kid of 16. They have a kid of 16. 16, 48.
Can you do that again for Bill? Can you slow that down a little bit? And
yeah, you have a kid at 16.
Carry the four.
Yeah,
minus one.
Kid has a kid at 16. Three times 16, 48. You can be a great grandfather.
He's very well behaved.
I'm 60. Yes, so he's very well behaved here and stuff.
Can you tell us a little bit about Urban Ventures?
Urban Ventures Leadership Foundation has been around 21 years. I was the first client. The day I gave my life to Christ, I sought out Art Erickson, knew that he worked at Urban Ventures, and asked him to help me with that walk. Because I didn't know what to do, man. You know, we make the mistake of thinking, oh, he just turned his life over. Oh, we just converted 50 souls to Christ. And then we don't monitor.
Mm.
We don't work with them. It's like, you know, making a person an airplane pilot and letting them figure out the controls by themselves. You know, and it's I'm so glad that I had people willing to help me to learn how to be a Christian man, which I had no clue, none whatsoever. So
how do they do that? What all areas do they offer where they can help? If I came in, where they can help us?
Well, we work with, man, we do one-on-one counseling. We do mentorship. We, mostly with men, you have to be willing to answer tough questions, you know, and help, you know, give advice. And sometimes just pick people up. You know, in my life, I remember trying to move, and I only places I had to move or could move into were just drug infested places because of my criminal history and never have had any apartment or anything in my name and stuff. And I thought I called Art just to tell him about the problem I was having. And he called a friend of his, and all of a sudden I was living in a place that I never could envision. You know, that they don't even let people with one felony in or a misdemeanor in, you know. So people in recovery have to support each other and know that if you're doing the right thing, we have to support each other and be willing to be a reference for each other, you know, and sometimes put our own names on the line. I do it for guys all the time. You know, if I see them really putting forth the effort, man, you know, I'll walk the walk with them. So just holding the hand, man, you know, because people are kids. I was a kid. I'm a 21-year-old kid now, you know, and I'm learning as I go. And even when I got custody of him, I never raised a kid in my life. Not the, I've raised criminals.
As a man of God.
I'd never raised a kid that actually knows who Jesus is and is doing well in school and is behaving like a young man. And so being around people, you know, getting advice all the time and things. I need that. I need, and I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah.
But back to Urban Ventures, we've been around 21 years. We work with men that want to change their life. And we work with men to, we'll help them get in treatment. That's, we do that a lot. We've got some great resources for treatment. You know, if they want to discover faith, we'll help them with that. Get a job, whatever it is, the mechanics of a man, they need to have a job, a safe place to stay, and a spiritual foundation. So that's the three main things.
I love that. I've always said that my recovery has to be better than my using. And we talked earlier about getting high can be fun. If I decide that I'm going to get into recovery, I need to eat, and I need a place to live, and I need some sober, healthy people to be around. And for a lot of us, when we get out of our using, we don't have a job. We don't have any money, and we don't have any healthy friends, Bill. So this community is huge. That's why the volunteers, if you're out there listening, you can do a lot of help. Part of our deal, I think, with Jesus is he doesn't save us if he doesn't have a job for us to do.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that is helping other people. John was talking about a book earlier. He's talking about chapter 5, and there's also a chapter in that book about working with others where it tells us that intensive work with other alcoholics will help ensure our own sobriety. But it's not just being around it that'll make you not want to use. It's you get to feel the victory and joy of the redemption of God when you see him working in another person.
Well, guys need to know that they matter.
Yes.
And if you've been told that you're not a good person or that you're a constant person that messes up and you hear that 100 times, it might take 700 affirmations to try to diminish some of that negativity you've had in life. And that oftentimes comes through mentors and support and accountability and people you can be transparent with.
Well, absolutely. And you hear that from somebody you admire. That means a lot. And early in recovery, you see somebody that has the job that has turned their life around, they say, hey, you know what? You're doing a good job. Boy, that's priceless.
Yeah.
So you're working with guys and helping them get jobs. You do some things with fathering, too, don't you?
Absolutely. You know, that's the number one thing. We want men to become, to take care of their children. You know, there's a way. I know sometimes child support and bad relationships with the parent, the woman that you used to so-called love. I went back and made amends to all. I had kids by three women, and I made amends to them all and formed a relationship with them so that we could co-parent our kids. And all of them, all three of them forgave me. All three of them welcomed me back and into their kids' life, not into theirs. And that's what I wanted. And so we could talk through raising our kids. So I did end up becoming a father to my kids 20 years ago, and they appreciate it. All my kids now love me and respect me. And that was one of the things I did ask God for that.
That's cool. Bill, one of the things we talk about, making amends. If you're really sorry about what you're doing, don't do it anymore. But also, you can pay it forward and help clean up some of the mess and help other people.
Absolutely.
And it keeps getting better for you, doesn't it?
Oh, it absolutely gets better. You know, you run into some rough waters. Even with the book, I've run into some rough waters. The book is absolutely true, and people tend not to sometimes like the truth to be said. And a couple of people in the book that are very close to me wish that I hadn't put some of the things I'd put in the book. But I told them, you know, I couldn't tell the story without putting it in there. You know, no offense to you. Couldn't tell the story without putting it in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's sort of rough waters. But I had good intentions, and I know I did the right thing, and I didn't mean anything bad. So they, with God's help, will forgive me. And I'll continue. I'm going to continue being a grandfather, a husband, and a dad.
And a great grandfather.
Great grandfather. 16. You know, the hard part for me on this interview, John, is we've got about 15 more minutes, and that means I have to wait 15 minutes to start reading this book, Bill. I'm dying. I got a copy here.
I'm just so blown away by the restoration that's gone on in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
The fact that the connection has been made with children, and that's been restored, and they find you a man that they love now and respect. And I see that to be one of the big problems with guys in recovery is their biggest fear is that they've lost their kids and they're never going to get them back. And that's just such a far off concept to them that they're going to actually have restoration. So God has really blessed you in a remarkable way because that didn't have to work out the way it did.
Oh, absolutely. And people need to not be impatient. When we get sober, the first thing we think is that everybody's going to come back, and it takes time for people. All you need to do is do what you need to do for you and keep proving to people. Yeah, you got to prove it to them by just being a good person. And sooner or later, you'll get that window of opportunity, I believe that, to come back. And if you're not ready, you'll blow it.
Mm-hmm.
And every person that I had wronged, almost to a person, came back in the 20 years. Some first year, some 10 years later, some as a year or two ago, but they all came back as far as forgiving me.
I love
it. Was
that
worth it?
We hear the story, and we know John from being on the show and from Urban Ventures down at the Salvation Army. The guy in the book isn't the guy I know, Bill.
That's the part that always floors me, because I can't imagine you've got a criminal bone in your body. I can't believe you don't have an unloving thought in your head or your heart. Because when the Spirit of Christ comes in and changes and transforms somebody, that's all I know.
Absolutely.
That's all I see, and I can't imagine anything else.
Yeah.
And so I'll read the book with great interest, but I'm just not going to believe that's you.
Yeah, I've had some people call me. I never, you know, it's like, yeah, I did those things. And I made sure everything I put in there that you could verify through public record and things of that nature. There's a lot of things that I put 80 to 90% of my life in there.
Okay.
You know, there's certain parts of it I just couldn't put.
George, you should do that. Produce a little pamphlet.
Did you say something?
There's an awkward pause. Right, we're going to take a very short break. When we come back, we're going to have one more segment with John Turnipseed. Thanks for joining us tonight. We'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to Faith Radio. Welcome back to Real Recovery. Thanks for being with us tonight. This is the hour is going quickly, George.
What was that?
I don't know. I'm tired. You know, this whole hour change has messed me up.
It has. How so, Bill?
Well, first of all, I had to get up at 2 in the morning to change my clock.
Yeah, that's, you know, you look pretty good for that, though.
Yeah, but, I mean, if you don't get it done right, then you're in trouble. So, and I didn't get to sleep right away, and so now I'm all punchy and, you know, I'm tired.
I appreciate the effort, I think. It's good.
You,
it's a professional.
Yeah, thank
you. What
a
great story, though. Isn't this, it helps my walk a lot to, I don't know the guys we were talking about before we went to break. I don't know that guy. I believe everything you're saying, and we get to see God's, you know, power in transforming people. One of the keys, though, that we always see is if you got the gift and you received the gift, you want to give the gift away. And that's your whole life now, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it ain't worth having if you can't share it with someone, you know. And I work with, like I said, a lot of guys. At Urban Ventures, 2,000 men have came through the center this year. And that's 2,000 men and 400 women. And I personally almost talked to every single one of them. And some of them more than others. But I try to be at the front door when they come in. I try to welcome them in. I make myself available to the clients there that they can always get on my calendar anytime they want. I don't care what the reason. I don't ask what the reason is for. And I've had some amazing, amazing people come through there and clients that are a lot smarter than me. And a lot of them look better than me. A lot of them more athletic, all kinds of stuff, you know, that I sort of pale in comparison to my client. And, you know, God has just chosen me to take the lead at this time.
Well, John, you're such an inspiration. When I think of you meeting these guys as they're coming through the door, what a great opportunity for these guys to, you know, to meet you. And I think of Psalm 56:3. It says, when I'm afraid, I will trust in you. Amen. It doesn't say when I'm afraid, I'll grow depressed and give up, or when I'm afraid, I'll run and hide. You know, you're there basically saying our doors are open. My arms are open. If you're afraid, trust in him, because that's where transformation happens, because I've seen it in your life and I see it in your life in such a powerful way. I can hardly stand it. You know, we talk about Philippians. Is it 3:10, George?
Power of the resurrection.
That I may know him in the power of his resurrection. How often do we witness the power of his resurrection?
Oh, amen.
I mean, so what I see in your life is the power of the resurrection of Christ. I mean, he came in, transformed your life. I mean, you had a lot working against you.
I had many things working against me, especially me. When you're born and raised, when you're born and get used to a lifestyle that's just crazy, it's in you. And it's hard to wait. My son, little Johnny, who's ever since he was 11 years old, has been in gangs and drugs. I've raised him to be that way and stuff. When I talked to him about changing his life about 12 years ago, he said to me, Dad, I don't know what else to be, man. You know, I can't be you, you know. So he's in prison right now. He was going to do a 10-year sentence, and he'll be finishing that up soon. And we have a great relationship, and he's made a lot of changes. And he's seeing that he can be someone else, you know. And when he comes back to these streets, I don't know how accepting they'll be of him. I think if he comes back to Minnesota, they'll kill him personally. He still has some very hardwired enemies, and so I don't want him to really come back, but we'll see what happens. But I can see change in him, you know.
And is he finding the Lord? Is he
we walk down that path, you know. Sometimes, you know, guys will fake the path because just please you. But he struggled with it for a while, but I believe now that he believes in the Lord, and he's so appreciative. This kid that's here with me, he knew his father for 1 month. He was 1 month old when his father went to prison. And my son knows that I'm raising him and is so grateful that I'm raising him. And we'll continue to raise him even when my son gets out. We've already agreed upon that. I'm not going to let him restart his life over because my son has to restart his over. That's his dad, but I am his grandfather. I am assigned to his life. And it's going to be a great life. It'll be up to him to mess it up because I won't.
Really a cool grandfather to hang out with, too.
Yeah,
a lot of fun. You bring a lot of joy all the times that I've been with you. It's a real heavy, powerful message, Bill, but there's a lot of fun here. There's a joyous recovery, and he's got to love hanging out with you.
Yeah, we, you know, that's my road dog. I take him everywhere where I can. I enjoy his company. And how else is he going to learn stuff? How else is he, you know, he's been everywhere with me. He's been on TV shows, been places with me. He hasn't traveled with me yet, but when he gets in the summer old enough, he'll travel with me. He'll be my personal bodyguard.
Nice.
You know,
that'd
when he gets 12.
Hey, Bill, if somebody wanted to buy the book, how would they go about that?
Well, we're going to put that all on the website. John, would you quickly mention that?
Bloodlinebook.com. Or you Google John Turnipseed, and you'll find a lot of interesting things. If you Google John Turnipseed,
yes.
You'll find out all about my family. You'll find out about my TV shows, my TED Talk. Everything that I've done is out there.
Nice.
You did a TED Talk?
I did a TED Talk.
Okay,
I didn't know
who
TED was.
we're watching that one for sure.
Yeah, I am. I'm going to watch it.
It's called Fix the, and I can't say the title. It starts with a D.
Okay.
I don't think I can say it on this radio.
Probably not.
Fix the roof.
Okay.
Fix the roof.
Okay, yeah, that works. We'll fill in the blanks.
I'm scared of man.
Yeah, I'm punchy
here.
All of a sudden.
Alex is awake.
Yeah. Alex, get
got
your hand
on the trigger.
On the trigger.
it's a
funny.
Great story of redemption that we know is true, and the Urban Ventures piece, the ministry, I think Jack Strouder and Stan Hill and guys that have worked to really help other guys, and their stories are similar, and we're, you know, working on changed lives, and they're doing it every day. Is there one client that stands out for you without using any names that you could give us a real minute or two story?
Yeah, there's a lot of clients, but there's a kid that I'm working with right now. And it was only given 6 months to live. And I just, as a favor to a doctor over at Regents Hospital, Dr. Tom Blee, just went and just talked to the kid. You know, he had been shot. He's a gangbanger. And I just talked to him, man, and started working with him. I came to visit him 4 times while he was in the hospital. When he got out, I went to see him, just befriended him. He's a really nice kid. And this kid has left the gang. This kid has it changed from 6 months to live to where he can live to be 90 now. God did that.
Wow.
He's changed his attitude. He enrolled back in school. He's going to get his high school diploma. He wants to be a chef, and I've promised to walk that walk with him and stuff. And he likes me. His friends are asking him now, hey, man, that dude, man. He had, you know, his friends used to look at me crazy, but now they look at me like, hey, Mr. Turnipseed, you know, because they can see what's happening in their friend's life. This kid is coming alive in a great way, and he no longer gets high. You know, I didn't introduce him to the program. He used to smoke weed all the time, and I told him I can't deal with that weed stuff, and he said, I'll quit, and he quit.
Mm.
You know, I mean, just a kid that just needed a man to love him. That's all.
An example that we can change this, Bill. That's why the mentor is so important. Here's somebody who's done what you want to do. And they'll help you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's that old saying: what you're doing speaks so loudly, I can't hear what you're saying. Because that people just observe, and you can't ever diminish a life that's being well lived.
Amen.
Well, I think a lot of us want to do it. We just don't know how. Show me how to do this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. John, I look at your life though, and I really love Galatians 2:20 when I think of you. And it says, I have been crucified with Christ, and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. The life I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me.
Hmm. It's so rewarding. I've got so many rewards in life. My mother talks about me like I'm a king. You know, I mean, she used to be ashamed of me.
Mm-hmm.
And now she points all of her sisters, they get in little clusters, and she'll say, well, do you know Johnny? He's got a book, and he's a minister, and he's doing good, and he's a boy, he's leading the world, and he's so, and they just, oh, shut up, don't talk. We don't want to hear about Johnny no more. I do. I love hearing my mom talk good about me. She really knows that I will take care of her and her grandchildren and my brothers and sisters. You know, she sees the kid that she raised, finally. And that's reward enough.
Does your mom still live here in town?
Yes, she lives here in town.
Well,
that's why I'm still here in the snow.
George and I, we want to come to dinner some night, on Sunday night at your mom's house. I want to meet her.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
tonight works.
Tonight doesn't work.
You know.
John, I got to say, this has just been a great hour. Thank you for being on the show. Thank you for being so vulnerable, so honest. Thank you for writing this book. And you talk about changing your life. This is one of the great stories on Real Recovery, in my opinion, George.
You bet.
It doesn't get much better than this, from where he was once to where he is now and what God's doing in his life on an everyday basis.
With God, nothing's impossible, Bill, and tonight's show is all about that.
Mm-hmm. And thank you for living with such integrity, and thank you for being so transparent.
Well, thank you.
It's great. It's great. It's a story. It's true. We got to see it. Love that.
Yeah, and we'll put all that information up on Real Recovery website. If you go to My Faith Radio and then go to the Real Recovery show page, you can pass this episode on to your friends or listen to it again if you like. We'd love to help you in any way we can. We'll have the information about John up on that as well. Next week, we have Rick Kua is going to be joining us. He is a former bass player for the rock band The Outlaws. And he was living a life of drugs and rock and roll, and now he's a very different guy. So we're going to have a great time with Rick next week. Thanks for listening tonight. Have a great week. Good night, and God bless. Hi, I'm Bill Arnold with George Fraser.
Hi, Bill.
Thanks for checking out this podcast of Real Recovery. You can hear the show live Sundays at 5 p.m. This, as well as many other podcasts, are available to listen to while you take a walk or do whatever you want to do. The address is myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening.